This is CliffCentral.com.
One thing's for sure, you always get the Burning Platform. It is a regular, and for some people, must listen. Every Thursday, it's where we check in on the current affairs of the day, of the week, and we give you 1 hour or less, but usually an hour, of all the important stuff that you need to pay attention to so that you can get to the office or you can go somewhere and people will go, wow, that person is so informed.
It's to prepare you for the weekend, for those times around the braai or at dinner parties, so you can be, like, informed and...
Well, this morning,
the life of the party.
This morning is no different. We're going to talk to Ivo Fechter with the Burning Platform, which is brought to you every week by Nando's, who are obviously the people who are not afraid of controversy. They are relevant as all hell, and not just because they make the best chicken, also because they have some of the smartest advertising and some of the smartest messaging around what it is to be South African. The good, the bad, and the hilarious. This morning, Ivo, it's very nice to talk to you. It's not as if there isn't any information in the world for us to discuss this morning, Ivo. We've got an entire cabinet to dissect. How are we feeling about the cabinet?
Good morning, guys. I am feeling very, very uninspired by the cabinet.
Aha!
You too. Pumi and I have criticized Cyril on a number of fronts before. I said the other day, let's give him a chance now that he's finally got a mandate. He's been duly elected. His party has been elected. We thought he'd have more of a free hand. This cabinet seems to indicate what you're saying. There isn't much new.
Well, you know, it's supposed to be a new dawn cabinet, right? Now, I mean, from what I can see, other than dropping a few people that he really couldn't defend anymore, like Batabile Dlamini and Nomvula Mokoyane, I'm glad to see the back of them. The rest of them are pretty old faces. I mean, Jeff Radebe was in Mandela's cabinet.
This is the first cabinet.
So was Dlamini Zuma.
This is the first cabinet that Jeff is actually not in.
Yeah. No, they did get rid of Jeff, but I see
Nkosasana. They got rid of him. Yeah. But Nkosasana Dlamini Zuma was. Mm. Tito Mboweni was in Mandela's cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I made a note of Jeff Radebe before he actually announced the cabinet.
but he has been there. He was actually one of the few who'd been there throughout.
He's not in the... Do you think...
You know, but hold on. Toko de Dise goes back to Thabo Mbeki's first cabinet.
Yeah.
Ndiwe Sisulu and Nosifiwe and Mapisa and Kakula go back to Mbeki's second cabinet.
And Naledi Pandor?
Naledi Pandor, Bladen Zimande, Ibrahim Patel, Pravin Gordhan, Aaron Motsoaledi, Fikile Mbalula, they were all in Zuma's first cabinet.
Mm.
So,
Nati Mthethwa, Angie Motshekga, Tlotlo,
you would be
all in Zuma's second cabinet.
You would be forgiven then to think that this is a closed system in which they shuffle the cards, but otherwise the deck is only so many cards and there's never any new cards.
There is nothing new or reformist about this cabinet. There's a handful of new appointments, most of them pretty junior. The only really surprising one is probably Patricia Delau.
Mm.
What about Ronald Lamola at Correctional Services?
Yeah, he's an interesting one. You know, I haven't followed his career very much, but he's an ANC loyalist. He's a justice, that's right.
He comes from the Youth League.
Yeah.
He comes from the Youth League. He used to be deputy president of the Youth League. That's right. Very much an ANC loyalist. I wonder what qualifies him for a post as senior as justice, frankly. It could be, if you think about it, with him at justice, that he will be sort of the spearhead for expropriation without compensation.
Yeah.
You know, the because that is an old Youth League and EFF policy, for that matter.
Hmm.
Well, there's that, and there's what Pumi and I remarked on just before 7, that the Ministry of Agriculture has two deputies, which is very interesting. And both of these people are well known to us as well. All three of them. Toko Didiza as the minister, who's really, she's been around a long time. She's not a disreputable person, but she certainly hasn't got a lot of things done. But we can't criticize her as being rotten like so many others. So perhaps she's someone who might get something done this time around. Who knows? But her deputies asked Dumo Dlamini, who we know from the trade union movement, is a bit of an ineffective guy. He doesn't really even have the ear of the trade unions anymore. And I don't know why he would be posted to agriculture, land reform, and rural development. Perhaps it was just in return for some favor. And Mkabisi Skwacha, who we haven't heard from since the Western Cape ANC crumbled and failed so badly so many years ago.
Yeah, so, you know, I think he's setting this all up for, you know, to implement expropriation without compensation in some way or another. You know, I think with traditional affairs, you've got Dlamini Zuma, mm-hmm. You know, speaking of familiar faces. You see, what was the other one that I was thinking of?
I saw something interesting that I'd like to hear your thoughts on. I saw that Maiti Nkwana Mashabane has been put in the minister in the presidency for women, youth, and persons with disabilities, which I've never. Yeah, I mean, this is one of the crazy departments that nobody really likes. Women, children, and people with disabilities find it patronizing.
It's not even funded. That's why they don't do anything.
It's ridiculous. So she's got a ministerial position, but she was hopeless as Minister of International Relations. And then for the interim between her displacement in that position by Lindiwe Sisulu and her current position was equally unimportant and ineffectual in another department. Why are they keeping Maite? What is she? Is she tremendously powerful in the ANC and we don't know about it?
I'm not sure, actually. I don't know her very well, but you're right. She has been ineffective. She hasn't really drawn much attention to herself. You know, and look, in that position, you know, what good has that ministry ever done? You know, what good could that ministry ever do?
Well, that ministry is not even properly funded.
All we need is some anti-discrimination laws and you know, sort of decent access laws for people with disabilities. Why would we need a ministry for that? You know, it really makes no sense to me.
So another person who's a complete unknown comes from Limpopo. Kumbuzo Chabeni, Minister of Small Business Development. I was looking at her CV a little earlier this morning, and a very interesting CV, and looks suitably qualified for small business. So she comes from Limpopo. She comes through the Youth League ranks. Mm-hmm. She was MEC, I think, at Finance in Limpopo. Has started a small business herself, which she had to relinquish when she moved back into government. So she seems to have, you know, she seems to have the nuts for what it takes. What do you think of that? Do you know anything about her?
No, I don't know anything about her. Look, her background in the Youth League would not recommend her to me. You know, they have a communist ideology. I don't know how successful her small business was, or whether her small business was dependent on government tenders, which is what a lot of these small businesses are. You know, so I mean, it's hard to run a small business
in Limpopo, and if she gave it up as willingly as she did for a government post, perhaps it wasn't as profitable as we are led to believe.
Yeah, indeed, indeed.
All right, so let's give
her. We'll have to see how that works out. But yeah, I mean, what business is it of the government to have a ministry for small business development? I mean,
and what they
should have a ministry. They should have a ministry for getting out of the way of small business.
Yeah, I mean, what have they done in that ministry that has been helpful and cooperative? Look, the point is, as a small business, and there are many of us who can relate this. We've never really had any inclination to interact at the level of a minister of small business, and we've never been given any idea of how that might benefit us in any way. I think it's just another way of creating a cabinet post that you can put someone in who you owe a favor to. I'm curious, because the ANC are kind of obsessed with quotas. How many women and how many men have we got an idea of that? Because there's always, you know, they think that's tremendously important that it's half and half.
I didn't count, but Ramaphosa said half and half.
I don't know. If he says it's half and half, let's take him at his word. I mean, I see another person who's been retained.
I mean, I couldn't care less if all of them were women.
Yeah, me neither.
You know, as long as they're competent, as long as they're honest and competent.
So speaking
that's really
of
all the qualification you need.
Speaking of honest and competent, one of the things that has captured the imagination of most South Africans that have a small interest in all these machinations of government over the past couple of days is the Public Protector's Report. Is the very public fight with Pravin Gordhan, and then the uncertainty of whether he was going to make it into this cabinet or not. And he has retained his space as the Minister of Public Enterprises. Mm-hmm. What do you make of all of those shenanigans?
Well, I mean, that was obviously a faction fight, not only within the ANC, but also between the ANC and the EFF. And it shows that Ramaphosa does have some strength, you know, that he didn't buckle completely there. The markets love these appointments. Now, it's weird. In finance, we have a communist, Tito Mboweni. His deputy, David Mosondo, is another lifelong communist. Came through the Youth League, the Communist Youth League, and the Young Communist League, and the SJCP itself. In public enterprises, we have Pravin Gordhan, who is also a communist. Right? And the markets are loving these appointments. The rand strengthened a little since last night, although it's still way off its post-election highs from earlier this month. That basically, I think, is the cleanup team. It's Mboweni and Gordhan are going to have to clean up the public enterprises, sort out the government debt, and fix Eskom and so forth.
So
they're going to have the heavy lift in this cabinet.
Do you think that, I mean, Cyril had a chance with all of the stuff that's happening with Pravin. He had a chance to be creative about how he empowers. Because, I mean, really, the minister's position is about policy. It's not necessarily about the nitty-gritty of fixing up all of these problem areas. Do you think Cyril had a chance that he has missed in terms of how he uses the people that he has instead of just putting them in the old spaces that we've always had? He could have been creative here, and he has failed to shoot out the lights.
I think there's been a lack of creativity in the entire cabinet. You know, I mean, even in the way he merged the departments, you know, he said, oh, you reduced the number of ministers from 36 to 28, which is glorious. But we still have a Ministry of Sport, which is now merged with Arts and Culture. Mm. What business is arts and culture of the government? What business is sports of the government? Mm. Why do we need someone in that position?
Yeah, it sort of smacks of government wanting to be involved in every aspect of people's lives rather than where government's needed. I'm curious.
Although to reduce the number of ministers, every second department has two deputy ministers.
Yeah, that's novel. But what did he actually get rid of? I mean, what has been thrown out?
Nothing's been thrown out. They've just been merged.
It's mostly been merged, yeah. Not much has been thrown out at all. Science and technology now goes with higher education. Cooperative traditional affairs. Let's have a look. Communications was merged last year, so that's already been done. Minerals and energy affairs have been merged.
So Aaron Motsoaledi at Home Affairs, which was another Aaron Motsoaledi at Home Affairs, which was another bit of a surprise for me. I mean, I think as a Minister of Health,
Thank God he's out of health.
Yeah, but at Home Affairs, with all of the kinds of problems that we have at Home Affairs, he's not the person.
This guy is like the epitome of nanny statism, you know. I mean, he was going to prescribe our diets and our gym regimes for us at the rate he was going.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm quite happy to see the end of it at health. We'll have to see how creative he can get at Home Affairs. I mean, how he can screw that up, because I'm sure he can do at least as good a job as Gigaba at messing up Home Affairs.
So the person who has been appointed to health is Zweli Mkhize, who obviously has been circling around power for some time now. He was Treasurer General in the ANC under Jacob Zuma.
Completely cocked it up in KwaZulu-Natal. Now he's been given
KZN.
A national.
Yeah, I mean, it seems to me like Cyril is holding together a very fragile coalition here, where all the disaffected members of various factions in the ANC have been represented and given some space in a cabinet where he has to watch his back every step of the way, because these people are not outside the tent pissing in. They're inside the tent pissing out. Is that more or less what you see?
I think that's right. I mean, I think if he really had the control of the party, I think he would have cut a lot more people out of the cabinet. You know, instead of sort of 90% of them being hangovers from Mandela and Becky and Zuma eras.
Can I ask you and Pumi both a serious question? Is it possible that we expect too much of Cyril here? Is it possible that he actually knows no better? Is it possible that he's not just holding together an alliance of factions, but that he actually thinks that government needs to be as bloated as this? Maybe there's some part of him that actually thinks this is the way to go, and that keeping as many of his friends, cohorts, and colleagues, and even sometime enemies, inside of this very comfortable nest of government is actually the purpose of government. Is there a possibility that he isn't better than we think he is?
Look, I mean, I've been negative on Ramaphosa right from the start. You know, everyone else got Ramaphosa, and I said right from the start when he was first appointed and gave his first Sona speech, I said, look, don't be fooled. Right? This is a guy, he made a lot of money off BE deals, but he's at heart, he's a socialist. Mm. Right? So expect socialist policies from him. Expect socialist appointments from him, and that's all we've seen.
Well, Pumi hasn't been very complimentary either. Pums, what's your take on that question?
So one of the things I've been thinking a lot about is the ANC and what this beast actually is. And the ANC of today is an ANC that's a broken party, but really the party that's broken was a party that belonged to Oliver Tambo. And the kind of leader that Oliver Tambo was for a very long time was a very strong leader who knew where to deploy people when he wanted them effective in those places. And that's the kind of leader the ANC needs now. Looking at this cabinet, I don't even think that Cyril is tenuously holding it together. He's not even tenuously holding it together. He's definitely not about to break the back of the beast in the way that, and this is why my question around creativity in terms of who he puts where. He's not displaying any of those things. And maybe he's just not a leader. He's, never mind the leader that the party needs right now, but just the basic tenets of what we require from a leader, not just the leader of a country, but the leader of this party that is wagging the dog in terms of this country. He's just not it.
Do you agree with that, Ivor? It's quite damning testimony there from Pumi.
No, I would agree with that. I mean, you saw that in his inauguration speech as well, you know. I mean, the country is suffering a crisis of business confidence. It was recently ranked as the seventh most miserable economy in the world, based on measures of unemployment and inflation. And all that he can do is just this highfalutin, flowery promises. You know, we're gonna have everything. You know, it's a utopian wish list. We're gonna have all the good things: growth and opportunity and productivity and innovation. And all the stuff is going to be affordable and accessible and sustainable. And we want all those things at the same time for everyone. Isn't that lovely? You know, a child of 10 could tell you that that's nonsense.
Ivor, but the ANC is a socialist party by and large. You know, they like to call, as they say on the inside, a broader church, right? They are a socialist party for what they are. At the heart of it, they are a socialist party.
And a party that's very much against merit because that doesn't suit the people who are in cabinet.
So I don't know if they are a party that is against merit. I'm not sure if that's a true statement. But what the ANC has been able to do, and again, you know, if I think about what Oliver Tambo was able to do, is he was able to hold this thing by the scruff of its neck for a very long time on multiple continents, above ground and underground.
Sure.
But what he was also able to do is he was able to capture the imagination of people outside of the party and shepherd them in the same ideals of what the party was looking for. And that's what we need from a president right now. So we need a president.
But there's a big difference. I mean, Oliver Tambo was running a liberation movement. You know, and it's it's one thing to fire up people, you know, in a struggle against a great injustice. You know, I mean, that's...
I suppose it's not easy, but
it's a very different proposition from running a government.
No, but there is a grave injustice that is being perpetuated against the people of this country. A large number of the people of this country are extremely poor, living below poverty lines. That is a grave injustice that nobody wants to see. Yes, but, that we can, that yes, but now, we but can now, all but now agree you've got
to on. Fight, but now you've got to fight against your own policies.
No, you don't have to fight against your own policies. You have to create policies.
And the ANC will not take responsibility for the fact that half of our country is unemployed and that half of our country is still dirt poor.
Ivo, what I am saying is that it is not about fighting your own policies. It is about creating policies that stop that injustice from being perpetuated. That's what they have to do. And then you have to shepherd people outside of the party into believing that this is something that can be done. And something that everybody wants to do. That's what they have to be doing. That's the new fight that they need to get into. Because all of these fights are really, whatever it is, it's in terms of liberation.
I agree with you. Ramaphosa is not the right guy to do it. I mean, look at that economic stimulus plan, right, which he announced last year. Mm. You know, I think going for what, 8 months now or so? what has he, name me a single thing that he has achieved, right? Of what he said. Oh, there's going to be a 400 billion rand infrastructure fund. Where is it? Nothing. He's achieved diddly squat.
What we're very good at doing, both at business, at the level of business in this country and in government, is we're very good at band-aids, right? We're very good at having like a big toy shop and saying...
Making plans. Everyone makes great plans.
And they had the conference in Sandton. They had that big conference in Sandton where all these big businesses got up and said they're pledging this and this and this. And all that they really did was they took projects that were already in their pipelines and they reshifted the wording of it and they made it sound like they are reinvesting in the country. But that's stuff that they were doing anyway. And it's not that they are doing amounts, to benefit their own
the
companies.
The amounts that they announced were a tiny fraction of the investment that was going to happen in the country anyway.
I want to move back to the cabinet for a second. Are there good stories out of this? You mentioned already you're pleased to see the back of Batabile Dlamini and who was it? Nomvula Mokonyane, right? Also, Rob Davies is gone. That's something surely worth celebrating.
But he's gone, but in his place we've got his communist sidekick Ibrahim Patel.
Yeah.
So nothing really changes on that front.
Yeah, so that's the same. Okay.
One communist replaced by another.
Are there ministers here who you believe are competent in their particular area of expertise and may be able to do useful things? I mean, Pravin's ideological background aside, he certainly seems to be one of the few ministers who gets things done. You could say the same about Becky Cele, even if you don't agree with all the things that he does. You don't agree, Pums?
What? Did we not read at least 3 crime stories in this morning's 5 things that you need to know? The man is practically a warlord and he's been unable to keep law and order in this country.
Correct. Hmm. Crime has risen under his watch.
Don't shoot the man. I'm searching for a ray of light here.
Gareth, what I feel like right now is I feel like your belligerence has jumped out of you and into me right now.
I'm looking through the list. I'm looking through the list, and I don't know. Barbara Creasy wasn't too bad in Joburg, was she?
Yeah, she's in charge MBC. Of fisheries, for God's sake. I mean, fisheries.
She's now in charge of environment and fisheries and forestry and so on. Maybe she'll be good at that. That would be nice.
You see, so the thing that I'm... And again, this morning I've already said it once, but the thing for me is about a true understanding of what it is that these individuals are tasked with. You know, like when you get a job, one of the things that comes with your job is a job description with KPIs.
Right.
I feel like we don't have KPIs for any of these people. So we don't know what it looks like when they are performing.
Ramaphosa did say that he will sign performance agreements with all of them and evaluate those performance agreements regularly.
Hey, man, those agreements must be signed with us.
I want those performance agreements to be published, so that when they're evaluated, all the newspapers can go, look, this is what you did, this is what you, oh yeah, and you didn't do that, and you didn't do that, and you didn't do that, and you didn't do that. And then he said he's going to take action if they don't meet those performance agreements. Well, I want to see him held to that. That would be a good change
That is what I feel. So one of the things that we are very clear about, and this is what irritates me when I see all of those swearing in things and people voshowing everywhere, right? Is I'm like, what we need of those people is not just to be a representative of the people. But what we need of them is we need them to be lawmakers. We need them to be people that understand how the law works and how crafting the law works and how pushing those policies through the various stakeholders. Because all of those things have lots of different people that they have to deliver for, that they have to punish in certain instances, that they have to pull together and herd into a particular way. And I don't know if these people are competent in that respect, in that regard.
I don't think so either.
And even worse, I don't know if the 400 members of parliament are competent in holding these people accountable.
Well, look, parliament should be writing the laws. Right, they are called legislators.
Hmm.
They should be writing. They don't do that. Right, in this country, it's the executive that writes the laws and then sends it off to Parliament for rubber stamping. Now, I've been reading laws and bills in this country for many years now, in many different departments. Right, all of them are shit. Right, they are badly written. They are vague. There are holes that you can drive trucks through. There are completely unrealistic provisions in most of them. The quality of legislation in this country is absolutely dreadful, and it's always been. And this is the same. These are all the same people that have been writing all these terrible bills.
And sometimes
they get fixed up a little.
You said something now that's absolutely true. I mean, it's always been like that because the old laws, some of which are still very much firmly in place from the apartheid era, are written just as badly and are just as cumbersome and just as badly thought through. So they end up having to be challenged in the courts, and the courts end up making the law, which is not what should happen. The legislature is there for that purpose. So, Ivo, I just want to play Julius Malema's reaction to the cabinet, and then we can talk about that a little bit. Obviously, he went after Pravin, and we've covered some of that ground before. But listen to what he had to say.
Ministers, unnecessary positions, which the EFF said before, we need to do away. And we've seen the return of Busasa people like Wedeman Taishu, Tawa Makweta. Those are the people you don't need in the so-called new dawn. The only positive thing about the whole cabinet is that we've got 50-50 men and women. That's a positive welcome, but the whole achievement gets undermined by the fact that the cabinet remained bloated.
Okay, so that's more or less what he had to say. The rest is about Pravin Gordhan.
Do you have the clip of Musi?
No, let me find that for you quickly because that's apparently hilarious. So Musi Maimane, of course, the most. Pumi and I were talking about this earlier. So Patricia de Lille. It's mostly because it's a middle finger to the DA that she's been appointed, but also because she's supposed to be a strategy for the ANC in the Western Cape going forward, right? I mean, that's the only reason you'd put
it. What do you think of that appointment, Ivor? What do you make of it?
I think that's exactly right. It's he said, he was going to appoint opposition politicians in the cabinet, and the DAs thought, yay, we're going to get a cabinet post. And then he appoints Patricia de Lille. He basically goes and pisses on Maimane's shoes. I think it has a lot to do. And there's some speculation that that this was being planned all along when Patricia de Lille formed the Good Party. It's really a bit strange that she forms this party right a few months ago, and now she says let's rise above party politics. I mean, could you imagine Captain Pillay saying that?
No.
Co-opted by the ANC, getting a cabinet post and saying, oh, no, no, we need to rise above petty party politics.
Here's Musi Maimane, visibly shaken by the announcement and obviously deeply disappointed on some level. Yeah, take a listen to this. I mean, why are we all relishing in this? I don't know. But it gives me great satisfaction. So here we are.
First and foremost, I wish her well. She's now part of the ANC's cabinet, and she must serve in that. And it is clear that, obviously, as part of the campaign, I cannot confirm whether this was brought on before. As the Sunday Times led with an article that proposed initially that she was promised an ambassador's position, this seems second best. But I cannot confirm that. And I think my focus now is to say we'll hold her accountable like any other person.
It must be. Oh, it's going to give me much joy today to see the memes.
I think the milk in his morning coffee was a bit sour.
Sure.
It's going to give me so much joy today to see the memes. Yeah. I've already started seeing some of those GIFs, and there's memes coming up about Patricia walking past Gokhelen or driving past with her Blue Lights Brigade. But shame, you know, I do feel a little bit sorry for Musi Maimane because he took a bit with the DA for his political ambitions, and it's not going to work out for him. And now he can't even jump ship. He can't, like Jimmy Manye, he can't jump into, he's not an astute enough politician to want to jump into a political party that will allow him to rise quickly to the top so that he can serve his true like ambition and just remain a career politician and get a cabinet post, not a cabinet post, get a place in the thingy in parliament. He's just, it's over skadovers for him.
Yeah,
to go to Harvard.
I don't think.
He's taken the DA into a nosedive, and there's a lot of reasons for that that we can discuss. Maybe we should get into it another time.
I want to get into one other thing.
He should be very disappointed with the whole lot. I mean, you know, with the election performance, with Patricia Delor being in cabinet.
Yes, sure. No, everything in Musi's life from here on in is just disappointment piled on disappointment. But that's
and
his own fault.
And he's so young, man. That's he's his own fault. So young.
You know what? What I'm interested in, Pumi mentioned Bantu Holomisa, but Bantu Holomisa is not in the cabinet. It's Nkosi Patekile Holomisa, who's been the head of the traditional leaders in South Africa for some time.
For a long time.
So he's been included in the Ministry of Justice and Correctional Services. Obviously, we have this interesting situation in justice, and it's something I learned in law, where we have indigenous law, as it was called at the time, and we have the normal statutory and common law in South Africa. So clearly, Patekile Holomisa is going to be brought in to deal with how exactly these are integrated as concepts, and some of them can be, and some of them obviously can't be. But the other minister, because there are two deputy ministers in Justice and Correctional Services, is John Jeffrey. Do we know much about John Jeffrey? I remember his name. It came up in some free speech matter not so long ago, Ivor.
I really don't. I recognize the name, but that's as much as I can say about him.
All right.
So I cannot enlighten you on that.
One of the major areas of plundering in South Africa's economy hasn't just been in the Ministry for Public Enterprises, but specifically the Ministry of Resources, Mineral Resources and Energy. And I see Gwede Mantashe is still firmly ensconced there in mineral resources, but now also energy. They've been combined. Mm. That's where Jeff lost his post. What's the significance, if any, of that?
Well, it just says that we're going to continue the same sort of policies. And you know, I did a report for the IRR recently on the mining industry and why it's important to the country and so on. And you know, the mining industry is in deep trouble. They made some improvements to the mining charter. But the mines are ready to take that to court again. And it still puts far too many restrictions on mines. The mining industry is not profitable. And it doesn't look like there's anything that will ease up on the mining industry. You know, I don't see that labor will ease up on the mining industry. I don't see that the government royalties, the government licensing will ease up on the mining industry. So with Gwede there,
and the really price of the mineral,
bright future for the mining industry, and now it's the same. And now it's the same for energy. You know, if we want to get energy companies to come and explore in South Africa, and actually, you know, turn it into a bit of a business here, well, we need to give them the environment in which they can freely do so. And I'm not confident at all that under Gwede they'll get that.
All right, let's move on to something else. Thuli Madonsela and Helen Zille did something quite adult this week. They had a disagreement, yes, and they resolved it by having tea together and talking it through like adults do instead of resorting to personal attacks on Twitter, which it did start as. And they both emerged from this with the wisdom that sometimes we lack in dialogue, particularly heated dialogue between people. They both walked out of there and said, you know what, this has been constructive. We both enjoyed spending time with each other. We found some areas of common ground. There will be more conversations to follow. It's almost as if they're trying to set an example for people who on social media insist on ad hominem attacks, on vitriolic language, and on unnecessary, frustrating, and sometimes very divisive language. Do you think that this is one rare example of how two people can disagree and yet still respect each other? Or do you think it's just a play by two people who are really kind of inconsequential now?
No, you know, I don't think that either of them are inconsequential. Helen Zille is obviously, since she left her position as Premier of the Western Cape, she's now free. And she has used this freedom to stir up a whole hornet's nest on Twitter, on social media. Mm. And she did it with some vigor. I mean, it was spectacular to watch. She's got it in for all the woke lefties, you know, all people who believe in identity politics and so on, and who think that the biggest problem in the world is white privilege, or male privilege for that matter, or, you know, whatever. And she really went stirring. And, you know, Thuli Madonsela, obviously, I mean, people were going to get offended, and I'm not surprised at all at Madonsela's response that says, look, white privilege is real, you know, and don't say it isn't. Because Helen Zille was going on about black privilege. The thing is, both of them were right to some extent, you know. There absolutely is white privilege. I mean, I still feel it when I walk into a store or into a police station or somewhere. I get treated better because I'm white. You know, I get taken more seriously, or, you know, walk into a bank, I get taken more seriously, and this is purely because I'm white, you know, because I speak English like a white person. I'm very aware of that privilege and so on. And that's not even counting the generational privilege you have of growing up wealthier and with better education and so on. In many cases, inheriting money, you know. So white people are absolutely privileged, and it still shows up in the stats. You know, they earn much, much more. They hold more senior positions, etc. But Zilla's right. There is also black privilege. Right. For many people these days, your position, and especially positions in government, are dependent on black privilege. There are a whole lot of theories that you could attribute to black privilege. The idea that white people can be racist and black people can't, you know, that's black privilege in a sense. So I think there was a lot of common ground that they could eventually reach. You know, is white privilege, but we also need to be aware that identity politics is not the be all and end all of politics in South Africa.
So, for me, purely as a media practitioner, I think a huge opportunity was missed here, because the one thing about their exchange on Twitter was that it lit the rest of us into it. So the minute they take it all offline, I mean, they could have had a debate.
They could have live streamed a debate.
They could have.
That would be awesome. Yeah.
They could have. It could have been like reality TV style, you know, just let us in on the. And what I missed from this opportunity is a way to be part of the engagement, because now you've brought us into this fight, and then what, you want to go have tea over there far away without us? Like, I think
they should actually release a joint statement saying what they discussed and what they concluded.
I don't even want a statement. I think the thing we love about Twitter and social media is the fact that it is It's a live interaction. Yeah. It's like being a fly on the wall. Mm. It's like being a fly on the wall. You can be part of it or not be part of it, you know? But that was an opportunity to create something spectacular. And I mean, really, we would have tuned into that live stream.
I mean, look, it's fun to watch. I mean, Helen Zille certainly can throw some haymakers.
Jesus, oh my God. Yeah. And with all her Botox, can you imagine?
She had some real zingers on Twitter.
She went after people. What was it about? Yeah. About child support,
the one woman who was a member of the NP and then joined the ANC.
Yeah, she really knocked her.
It was hilarious to watch.
She said I know
Helen Zille can do that live as well. Mm. You know, she can do that live. Well, the cuff.
Isn't it great though that we can have these two elders, because that's what they both are now, who've both they've distinguished themselves in their respective jobs. Thuli Madonsela, without doubt, is a national treasure of a kind, because she stood up to the Zuma regime and started to talk very openly and plainly about state capture long before the rest of us did. So Thuli Madonsela has already, I think, she's earned our respect. And I think the same is true if you look at how Helen Zille managed the Western Cape, best premier in the country by all measures. And someone who has held to her principles from those early days when she was a journalist. Even if we don't agree with her, she stands as a person with opinions and with principles, and is not afraid to set those right who she thinks believe are wrong, and happy to be corrected occasionally. She's been humble enough, as has Thuli. Correct, and she's admitted as much in a recent article about how she is partly responsible for the demise of the DA, which I thought was. You know, that's big to admit that, because a lot of people have been saying it, and to hear it come from her, I think, is quite adult. Mm. I'm just pleased to see there's a bit of adult conversation in among all of this childishness around politics.
Yeah. No, indeed. I'd like to see more of that. You know, I'm kind of looking forward to seeing Helen Zille unchained, if you like. and see what she tackles, because there's a lot in our public debate that I think needs to be tackled. You know, there's a lot of this sort of woke identity politics that just becomes vicious and so on, excludes people. It's, you know, I'm now alt-right, or I'm a racist. You know, everyone's very racist because they say this, that, or the other. It becomes very difficult to have an adult public debate when you're really arguing at a sort of student level, you know, with identity politics and critical race theory. And I'd like to see Helen Zille try to break that.
Yeah, but you see, I think that the unfortunate thing, and the flip side of the coin of everybody watching all the time, is that and it's the world over, it's a problem the world over, is that we're so caught up in the act of debate, in the act of speaking out, in the act of defiance. We're so caught up in that act and public spectacle of it that it at some point it loses some of that authenticity, I think. And that's a lot of the stuff that we watched with Helen, with shock horror at times. It seemed to me that that's exactly what it was. It was all just, you know, acting out, and much, much less of a authentic engagement.
You know, that was my initial reaction. I thought, here she goes again, you know, and picking fights that she cannot win. But then I saw how she developed the argument and so on, and how she brought it back to the idea that of non-racialism. Mm. You know, we should reject racial nationalism.
Yeah, it certainly seems to me that these discussions around all of this, white privilege, black lived experience, all of this stuff, it's very interesting in a philosophy department in a university, but it doesn't help people in any real sense, except as a way of blaming each other. I heard someone I saw someone on Twitter asking Thuli Madonsela, how do I cure myself of this? And that's a very smart way of going about this thing. If you have a certain lived experience, or you have a privilege or something, how do you, if you have good intentions, how do you rectify in your own life that situation? And the answer is, there isn't a way, because it's something that you've had imposed on you by someone who has a different philosophy, whether it's the black lived experience or what Hennen calls black privilege, which I also think is ridiculous. I think white privilege is ridiculous, frankly, too. So I don't agree with you either. Yes. But the fact is that we're all treated differently for various reasons. And that's never going to change. And that's how people are. It's like you don't fall in love with everyone you meet, and you don't hate people that you don't know, unless you're an irrational creature that's just, I mean, like there are a lot of things about human nature that we're only starting to understand, and only the surface of these things after years and years of psychology and philosophy and neurology. And we're only scratching the surface of that stuff. So to get behind any of these ideologies and make it your be-all and end-all without any practical solutions seems to me like mental masturbation.
Look, I think the world over, one of the big curses.
Like, solve someone's problem. If you feel you've got white privilege, psychology. Fix someone's life, make it better for them. Help someone.
Yes.
Do something. But, you know, like their life has to practically improve.
But I think the big problem is that we tend to be tribalistic. You know, we tend to be nationalistic.
It's humans,
right? We look at ourselves and others, and we do that all over the world, right? And it doesn't matter whether it's white or black. You know, in England, they hate the Poles because the Poles came in and they're better truck drivers than the English.
Well, Nigel Farage is about to win the EU elections for the British. I mean, it's
So you got all this nationalism and tribalism and so on, and anyone who stands up and says, let's break this down, right? Let's try to deal with each other without this tribalism, without this nationalism, and try and look at what we have in common. I mean, I'm all for that. I think tribalism and nationalism is a very, very destructive force in the world.
A lot of isms. I think the one thing, though, which every now and again I'm completely astounded by is how the more adult we become, we forget the basics that we were actually taught when we were children. And the basics are, you know, like playground basics of treating people the way you would want to be treated, of treating people the way, you know, of walking away from a fight. The playground basics of just, you know, walk away from that fight. You don't have to attend every fight you're invited to. You know?
No, indeed.
Treat people with, wash your hands when you come out of the bathroom. You know, it's like basic shit. We forgot, like, the more respect, adults you become, you less and less of the foundations that we kind of start out with become part of our everyday being, way of being.
You know, and the old one, you know, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me. Really, have some tolerance. I mean, you know, a lot of these things is water off a duck's back.
All right. Well, after all of these cliches and similes, we're going to have to call it quits on the Burning Platform for this afternoon, or this morning. Otherwise, it will be the afternoon. Ivo Fechter, thank you very much for joining us. And Pumi Mashiho, thank you very much. I'm glad that both of you both of you had a Helen Tully type conversation today, rather than a shouting match on woke Twitter. It's always nice to hear some real thoughts and some insights, and to have some, and for all of us to have a rant, because you two both have to admit you both had a bit of a rant about the cabinet.
Gareth, but it's your fault because you started the day on a rant.
I will own it. Ivo, I don't know if you heard that, but I've come to some kind of conclusion myself about politics. I am less interested in politics now than I've ever been at any other point in my life, and I've had a fairly abiding love, or at least interest, in politics for most of it. I've come to the point now where I treat politics like astrology. It's something that stupid people indulge in, because you don't need to be qualified, well-read, cogent, have a track record, or any of that stuff to discuss politics. You can be, and this happens, and I'm talking about America, South Africa, European politics, the whole lot. Politics is
Brexit.
For all of it. Politics is for uneducated and usually not particularly thoughtful people to talk about. It doesn't interest me. I'd rather talk about engineering or science or biology or history or things like that you actually have to have some knowledge of to discuss. Is that me being an elitist?
Politics is the one job for which you don't need no qualifications, right?
Well, just cabinet
the
proves
other one
that.
Is journalism.
Yeah. Oh, right.
The other one is journalism.
Well, Ivo, thank you very much. You've distinguished yourself in both today, as has Pumi, and I hope that we've added value to people's lives. Thank you very much. Ivo Fechter, The Burning Platform, which is brought to you by today's very hot Nando's. Or do you like that Mozambican one that they do?
I love that Mozambican one. That tomato. Heesh, man.
You know that I went to the farm where Nando's grow those chilies in Mozambique.
Mm.
It's just outside of Maputo. And they have a specific strain of chili that they grow there. They don't grow any others. They don't intermix them. And it's consistent. Like, they want the same amount of heat. They want the same amount of flavor.
Yum.
They work very hard in their chilies. So
yum.
Next time you get a bottle of that Nando's sauce and you make your own food, or if you just order from them, you're going to taste that consistency. And I don't know if you've noticed it, but it pretty much is at every Nando's I've ever been to.
This is CliffCentral.com.